Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, NASCA. Tonight we're doing episode number 2,442, and we've done 625 under a different name. So you can see we've done over 3,000 episodes of radio shows, and we're very proud of it. All of them are available in our archives. If you want to go back and listen to any show that's been previously done, you can always do that. Going back something like till 2008 or 9, I'm not sure which we started. Tonight's show has a special format that we do on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's a call-in discussion show with a survivor professional. That's a person who's both a survivor and a professional in some capacity, which we refer to as a hyphenate. We'll use an open mic forum on tonight's show, and anybody who calls in can engage with the group of people that come here. Tonight's the special co-host will be Lori Golden. She's from San Diego, California, a survivor and a private psychotherapist who's worked with other trauma and abuse survivors, and she shares that she's a survivor of incest. Her father sexually abused her from the ages of 5 to 16. She shares that when the sun went down, quote, I was filled with terror, hypervigilance, and waiting. Everything in my room came alive, unquote. Lori started using drugs in college at 18 years old and covered her worthlessness, aloneness, and increased desperation with bulimic exercising, food addiction, and drugs, accumulated in a suicide attempt at 27. An incest survivor, an addict in Narcotics Anonymous for 33 years, as well as a food addict, Anonymous for 30, she tells us her book, My House of Lies, is all about her awakening from a childhood of sexual abuse. That's the subtitle. My House of Lies, Awakening from a Childhood of Sexual Abuse. She is passionate about telling her story, and we're always happy to have her with us. The number to dial, we'll get to you in just a moment, is 646-595-2118. And we certainly do hope you'll call in. 646-595-2118. Lori stands ready to answer any question that's related to child abuse at all from her perspective, and we'll all have the opportunity to share our own experience, strength, and hope on these topics. So call in if you have a question about child abuse or if you have something you'd like to discuss or hear discussed, and we'll get to it. It doesn't have to be immediately part of Lori's experience. Anything at all related to child abuse, it's prevention, intervention, and recovery is fair on one of these Tuesday and Thursday night shows. Again, the number to dial is 646-595-2118. I'm going to go ahead and open up Lori's mic here and say good evening to you, Lori. How are you tonight?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have an issue that I want to talk about in a minute, but I'll let see if anybody else brings something up first.
Okay.
And we do have we do have Bailey Smith with us too, and of course you know Bailey. Bailey is assisting me this evening in making sure the show goes smoothly, and so I want to invite her to the microphone too. And Bailey is from South Florida. She's typed in. She is. I think she misspelled her name. Don't you have an I in your name, Bailey? Anyway, Bailey Smith from South Florida. Okay. Bailey, thanks very much for joining me.
Okay, you just made me laugh.
Hi, Bailey.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm tired.
I'm telling you. I'm tired as well, and I'm tired from all of this coronavirus.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started.
I know. Pretty intense. It's exhausting, actually.
Yes. Yes.
So,
absolutely.
Bill, you mentioned you wanted to talk about something.
Well, I will in a moment, but first I want to introduce Linda Beattie, who's called in from New Jersey, which is a special treat for us. We don't hear from her very often on Tuesday night, but I'm delighted that she's here. Linda, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Bailey and Linda, Lori, are also hosts of various shows, but tonight they're calling in, you know, to be panelists. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Lori. I just wanted to call in and support. I wanted to support you, Lori. I'm not going to last long tonight, maybe just a half hour, but I wanted to come on because everybody should be listening to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Linda. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It's true.
Thank you, Linda, for calling.
Yeah. All right. I'll wait until everybody finishes. Go ahead.
I said, thank you, Linda, for calling.
You're welcome. I don't know how long I'll last, but I'm here.
That's all right, Linda. I'm glad you're here.
Well, I was thinking, Lori, of continuing the discussion we had today in a different place that I was involved in, and it had to do with the difference between. Let's see. It was a discussion about self-esteem, but it had to do with learning how to stand up for yourself versus learning how to be aggressive. So assertive rather than aggressive. That was a very interesting discussion. A lot of people had something to say about it. And I thought I'd throw it out there in case you had something you'd like to contribute to this. All of us come to recovery with, in my experience, very low self-esteem. Even if we don't recognize it, we realize it later, you know. and part of our challenge is to build up our esteem, to find ourselves kind of worthy of living. Somebody put it like worthy of breathing, you know.
Yeah.
So what would you give us a thought or two about this, Lori, from your perspective?
Well, I do know that there is a huge difference between being assertive and aggressive. And aggression is more about fear. And assertiveness is more about strength. And I know because I've done both. There was a time where when I wanted something or I was trying to get my needs met, I did it in more of an aggressive way than just stating how I feel and what I need. And I'll tell you, Bill, it took a lot of practice over the years in recovery to learn how to be skillful at doing that. And I really want people to understand that when we talk about things like this, it truly is a practice. Learning how to ask for what you need in a dignified manner where you can feel self-respect is something that I think all abuse survivors need to learn. Because we're used to operating in a wall of protection and with the anticipation that we're not going to get our needs met. So when you come from a place of lack and a belief that you're not going to get your needs met, you really don't know how to ask for what you need. Instead, what you end up doing very often is pushing people away. And the very thing you say, the very thing you say you want is the opposite of what you get, you know? And so this is a skill that I feel really takes practice, and for survivors of abuse, absolutely a skill that we need, that everyone needs to learn. It's not easy
to ask for what you need. I agree.
You know, there's a difference between self-assertiveness, because that comes from a place of self-esteem. So if I'm, you know, as a recovering drug addict for many years, there was a time where I felt like I had, you mentioned, Bill, about breathing. That was my thing. I felt like I wasn't, I was guilty of breathing. I was guilty of everything. And I felt a lot of self-hatred. And when people feel self-hatred, they really don't know how to ask for what they need, because they don't know what they do need to begin with. Because you have to start liking yourself and doing esteemable actions in order to be able to practice and be assertive and not demanding or not needy or not, you know, yelling or raising your voice or things that do that. I was very skillful at pushing people away and then feeling badly because I wasn't getting what I needed. And I blamed everyone else because I wasn't getting what I needed, instead of understanding
right.
that I was truly, at that one point in my life, I was truly afraid to get what I needed, because something had to change in order for me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that all kind of...
Oh, I knew you'd have wonderful stuff to share on this topic. That's why I thought I'd start out with it and see where it goes. But I hope the listener is hearing us too, because I truly believe, as you, and you verified it too, or you codified it by saying, this is something we all need to practice. It's not, it's
yes.
a skill set that does not come with traumatized people. We have to learn it, and it's
no.
a new thing for us. We're pretty much crushed in our trauma, aren't we? We're crushed. And,
yes.
You know, and,
yes.
and coming from that kind of place, we really have to work hard to kind of earn our own self-respect in a way, you know?
Yes.
Anyway, that's
yes.
That's some of the thoughts that I had. Let's see what Bailey or Linda has to say about it. And let's remind people that they, too, can join this conversation simply by calling 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. The topic right now is but it may change. The discussion topic right now is the differentiation between being assertive and being aggressive, I'd say. That's the general topic. Linda or Bailey?
Mm-hmm. I love that definition, Lori, of aggressiveness is fear and assertiveness is strength. Because we can look at that and say, when someone's coming at us aggressively, like that's the first thing I think when a client's coming at me aggressively. Okay, what are they afraid it's going to happen? What's really underneath their aggressive behavior? And,
yes.
and I think that's just such a great skill. If we find ourselves being aggressive rather than assertive, what are we afraid of? What's going on with us? And it's a way to check yourself with that definition. So I absolutely love that.
Thank you, Linda.
You guys are on the same page.
It's
not fair. You're ganging up on me.
Bailey? I'm putting my thoughts together.
Sure.
When I'm obviously going to use my experience with those two definitions. So when I, when my marriage ended, I was extremely numb. Okay, it happened suddenly. Like I was in denial, and I did have
assertiveness because I had good self-esteem because at that point I had very high self-esteem because I was skinny and I always associated skinny and happy, which I've learned does not go together. But at that point, I did feel very good about myself. So I did have good self-esteem. As far as aggression, as I started realizing and being in group therapy that I was a victim of domestic violence and abuse and all the things that happened over that next year, I became very aggressive in my behavior towards, I was dealing with police at the time, and I would do all my investigating and started learning all the laws down here in South Florida because they weren't doing their job. So I became very aggressive in that way. So that's how I can apply it to myself. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I want to. Go ahead, Lori.
I just want to touch on one thing. You said you had self-esteem. I'm not sure. And then you attached skinny to it. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have self-esteem because of your body? Or did you have self? Okay, so it was the
I felt very good
of self-esteem?
About myself. I felt very good about myself. So
for me, that feels like what I did with my eating disorder.
Yeah, I did. I always had an eating disorder.
Okay,
but
I get what you're saying.
At that point, you're talking about assertiveness and self-esteem, right?
Yes.
So at that point, I did feel very good about myself, but I was also very numb to what had happened. So I did feel good about myself, but I was also very, very numb to everything that was going on. But once I started, and yes, I did associate skinny and happy my entire life. So it was
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're coming from that, the eating disorder, the connection between self-esteem, what we think is self-esteem when we're skinny, right? Is that what you're saying? Okay, now I understand.
But I was very numb, so I did not feel, bad about myself or any of those things come much later on. Because of, I did feel good about myself. Now, it wasn't in a healthy fashion, but again, my aggression came in a different way. It was towards what my abuser did. It was towards how I wasn't being helped the right way, and I fought back big time. So. That's where my aggression and assertiveness was in the beginning. So what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I wasn't going to say that.
Bill was going to say something.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, I was.
Well, I was going to make the point that I think there's a difference. Go ahead, Lori. It's your show.
No. I actually wasn't going to say something. I wanted to hear what you said.
I was going to mention that I think there's a difference, and I wanted to get some feedback on this. I think there's a difference between being kind of proud of something like a body image, for example. And I know it's hard to maintain a body image, and if you're really attached to it, you may be proud of it. But isn't that like it's not really a matter of esteem? It's more false pride, isn't it? Because after all, you know, the body is only a small portion, frankly, of who we are. There's a whole lot of other aspects to who we are that have more to do with how we feel, act, you know, make decisions, choose, and so forth. So that's the point I was going to make and get some feedback on that thought.
No, I really agree with what you're saying, Bill. I think there's a difference between feeling good about oneself and as a result of feeling self-love, self-care, you want to have a nice body out of love. When I used to think I was thin, or my eating disorder went two ways. First of all, let me just say I was never overweight, but I was always in my head in control of things. So when I felt self-esteem, it's because I was in control of my body and my looking a certain way. If I didn't look a certain way, I would go into worthlessness, the flip side of the coin. So that to me wasn't about self-esteem. That was about my self-destructive behavior, my eating disorder. It was not about self-esteem. I felt I had no self-esteem. I felt that if I was thin in my head, I felt deserving and I felt worthwhile. If I gained literally 2 pounds, I would feel worthless. So for me, self-esteem, wanting to be healthy in one's life, is coming from self-love. It's coming out of that. It's coming out of nurturing ourselves. That, to me, is different.
So isn't it a product of coming to love us however we are, just the way I am right now? It doesn't mean I can't improve. I could improve, yes. But where I am right now, it's okay with me. I love me today, right now, in this body, in this shape, in this, you know, these kinds of talents and so forth. And that, to me, I mean, I'm asking you the question, Lori, but it seems to me is kind of the healthy way to approach this thing we call esteem,
yes.
Right, or pride.
Yes.
The correct kind of pride.
Yes. Yes.
Can I type in? Okay. I was not, obviously, I was not healthy at that point. And I, like I said, I had image issues and eating issues. And I associated happy and skinny. It was not, that's not healthy. That's not okay.
Yeah.
But it did give me good self-esteem. Majority of women that had been through abuse or victimized or domestic violence are miserable with themselves. Most of them were overweight. Most of them didn't want to go to the gym. I mean, they were in that sense, they were not in a good place. I was overworking out. I was always dressed up. Nobody would have ever known what I was dealing with underneath or inside. I put on a very good show, but again, I had a mental illness. I still have it. I still struggle with it, but I do know skinny and happy don't go together. That took a lot of work with that in therapy. But when I am down, when I'm not in a good place, it all crashes down with me. Even though I know it doesn't go together, when I have my dark moments, all those things hit me. The healthy part is, at this point, is that I know it doesn't belong together. So I just wanted to clarify that it was not a healthy feeling good self-esteem.
We had somebody for a second there, 662 caller. I hope you're still listening. I did too. If you can just let me finish. I hope if they're listening that they'll call back in. We'd love to have you on the panel. I was making an attempt to go away from Bailey's issue just to to express it in such a way that, you know, in general, I think we can all identify with some aspects of how we can differentiate between a kind of a false pride and whatever it is, whatever the issue is, and a coming to love who we are, the way we are, not just body image, but, as I said before, our talents and our abilities and what we've achieved and how to be grateful and, you know, for the place we're at. And I think it takes those things to have what we commonly refer to as self-love. I think that's right, Laura.
Yeah.
Linda, what do you want to add to this?
I was meaning about the body coming from self-love. To me, it's about accepting oneself as you are. And it's about your total being. It's not just about your body image, but I know when we were talking before about the body and self-esteem, for me, when you have self-esteem, it means you care about yourself. It means that you love yourself. It means that you want to be good to yourself. And as a result, when you want to be good to yourself, you do things to help be healthier. And you want to be healthier because it all comes out of just being self-care. And so, yes, accepting yourself as you are is a huge one. I know for many of my meditations over the years, asking for the universe, help me accept myself as I am today. That has always been a big part of my meditation. When I ask for what I want, accepting myself as I am today is really important to me because it means that I'm being who I am in the moment. I'm not trying to be different than what I am. And that, to me, is ultimately what I strive for, just accepting myself as I am.
So let me throw out a different aspect of this. How about I pride myself that I'm honest, okay? But the truth is, when I really examine it, I'm kind of ruthlessly honest, you know? Sometimes I'll tell a person off. You know, I'll tell them, hey, I don't think you should bother. You know what I mean? Being honest. But is that kind?
Yeah.
Is that effective even? Or maybe going the other way. I think of myself as honest, but the truth is I tell a lot of white lies. Like when people ask me how I'm doing, and I say, fine, you know, but I'm not fine. I don't know how to be honest in a way that it can be heard, so it's not ruthless. Maybe it's rigorous honesty, but not ruthless honesty. And I also want to find a way to be able to say honestly, you know, Linda asked me how I'm doing, and I say, well, I got a couple things on my plate that I'd like to talk to you about. You know, that kind of honesty. That's, I think, where I gain my real sense of self and can be proud of the fact that I recognize that I'm a broken person, frankly. I have a lot of problems, but that I'm on a path that's healthier than it used to be, and I have every reason to believe that it can get better, too. I'm not finished.
Oh.
I don't think being proud is being finished, either. It's knowing you're on the road. I mean, that's how I see it. Linda, let me get you in here to include you in the conversation. You want to comment on anything you've heard in the last couple minutes?
With the self-esteem issue, it's, you know, my self-esteem does not depend on my weight. It doesn't depend on how my hair came out. It doesn't depend on whether Bill likes me today or not. It doesn't depend on external things. It depends on who I, yes. Do I want to have nice hair and do I want to work out? Yes, I want to do those things because I love myself and I want to be healthier and I want to look good for other people and I want to have people like me, but I'm not going to change who I am to make that happen because I like who I am. And that's the difference. Outside stuff does not affect it. Yes, we all have bad days and things like that, but it's the rudimentary issue of your self-esteem is not going to be changed by things like that. And
no,
I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I attempted to bring up an issue that's not physical, I pride myself that I'm an honest person. That kind of issue. Something else could be used as an example too, I'm sure. But so I was trying to move it away from simply the physical into other aspects of who Bill is. And I think you hit one of the biggest notes of the night is acceptance. I think you start with that. But acceptance is really being, you kind of uncover stuff about yourself that maybe you're not happy about right now, but you accept it. It's who I am right now, and I'm going to work on
it.
Does that help us with our conversation here? Yeah?
You know, self-acceptance for me was quite a journey in learning how to be in practice of self-acceptance. There was nothing about myself that I felt acceptance about. I was self-destructive. Mm. I wanted to hurt myself. I felt self-hatred. There was nothing, I never could value things about myself. I didn't know how. And I'll tell you, it was a lot of hard work to get to practice self-acceptance. It didn't come easy, and it's one of those things that we first have to stop being self-destructive, and we have to start doing things that we feel good about, that bring us self-esteem. And I always say to people, you know, when you're doing actions that aren't esteemable, you end up feeling shame. And shame is really a difficult experience for people. You know, when we yell at somebody, when we don't act appropriate, when we're hurting ourselves, when we're acting in negative ways, none of that leads to feeling self-esteem. None of that.
Right.
So really, you got to look at what are esteemable behaviors that people need to learn. When you come from abuse, you don't have those behaviors. You don't understand what they even are. What you feel is broken and ashamed and fearful and protective. And so you start out in life with all of this going on, and then you have to, including doing drugs and alcohol and addictive relationships and self-harming behaviors. And so it's quite a journey for people who come from childhood abuse to learn how to love themselves. It is quite an interesting journey.
Well,
and I'm just saying that in what ways?
Well, I mean, the process that I've used is the one that includes inventory, which not everybody uses, obviously. But inventory required an awful lot of work. And it was really taking a hard look at myself and admitting, you know, the first inventory was resentments, but then the second one was fears, which I found out ran everything in my life. Fear ran everything in my life. And in doing that, I got a really clear picture. I mean, I did thorough inventories. You know, I got a clear picture at what was driving Bill. And it was not pleasant necessarily. It was not pleasant to look at. Fortunately, the process as I continued allowed me opportunities to correct those things and to make amends for anything that I had damaged along the way. So I began to heal through that. But I don't know how many people go through a process like that. So that's my personal experience, and I'm not sure that other people who go to other kinds of, you know, recovery processes do it that way. That's all. If you're interested, by the way, listeners out there, in calling in, we'd love to have you. All you got to do is dial 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. We briefly had a 662 caller, someone from the 662 area, I think it's Mississippi, that we couldn't identify, and we didn't get to them in time, and they dropped off. But if you're listening still, please do call back in. We'd love to have you included, and anybody else who's out there. 646-595-2118. So as I say, you know, my experience is that, but that's, you know, that's just my experience. It doesn't mean it's better or worse than anybody else's. It's just mine. And, you know, I'm not a therapist. I have worked with many, many, many people, but I don't follow the tradition of therapy, I suppose you'd say. I don't know how to say it even. Linda, what am I trying to say?
You're not a trained professional, but you have a lot of life experience and have been doing counseling in some sense with people for a long time.
Yeah,
yes,
that's right.
It doesn't, right,
yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's right.
And aside from the fact that you created this wonderful organization.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, and I made it in the image that I thought would be most, you know, I had been looking for something like this and couldn't find it. Nothing. And I'd been looking for decades, frankly. So at a certain point, I just launched it, and I included all the ingredients that I thought would have been important to me to have had available. And this is what it turned out to be, NASCA. And, of course, it's grown since then. All of you have suggested things that, you know, have really made a huge difference in what NASCA is like now. But it did start out with the origins being, you know, not dissimilar from what it's become. I want to welcome Leah, your friend, Bailey, from New York, to the air. She's just called in. And I'll open up her mic,
Leah.
And say,
hi.
We're really glad you're here, Leah.
Thank you.
Always glad to be here.
Hi, Leah.
So, have you been listening to the show, Leah, or are you just new to the show?
I just typed in now.
Okay. Well, we have an ongoing discussion about the difference between kind of assertiveness and aggressiveness, but all kinds of other things, self-love, acceptance. These are topics that we've been going through. And we're happy to continue this as a topic, or we can change the topic, too. It's up to the panel, Lori, Linda, Bailey, and Leah. Okay?
No, I'm fine.
Go ahead, Linda.
I have a spinoff from that topic in that a lot of folks, I'm sure, listening who have been through sexual abuse or childhood abuse may be suffering with things like eating disorders, all kinds of control issues, cutting, ways to deal with the pain. And they feel like as long as they're doing that, they're happy or they're okay. And what would you say to them, Lori, that false self-esteem, so to speak, and how they can get past that?
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that. When I first started using Linda, I felt like the answer, I finally had a solution for my pain. It felt wonderful. I felt like I could be anything I wanted to be as long as I was doing a drug. I think I once said this on this show. If I wanted to be smart, I could do an amphetamine. If I wanted to go to sleep, if I wanted to not be sad, I could do a line of coke. If I wanted, so I felt like it was the answer to everything. And I did. It's very interesting. I felt like I could go out in the world as long as I had Blanky. I felt like my drugs really were like my Blanky. And I felt like as long as I had my drugs, I could do so many different things out in the world. And it was so interesting. When I came off drugs at 37, I felt like I couldn't do anything. I felt a complete loss. But I believed when I was in my eating disorder, when I was doing drugs, that I was, and I would dress up and I'd go out into the world. I really was successful. And when I came off drugs, I felt like, oh, my God, I don't even know. I didn't know how to function. It was the craziest thing to be so functional and believe that I was, and felt so much pride around how well I functioned. But when I came off drugs, I didn't have a clue. It was so interesting. I felt like I felt like anything that I had acquired up until that point was just bullshit. It was an illusion that I kind of created for myself. Yep. You know?
Yes,
so there is a lot of false self-esteem that comes from, eating disorders particularly, and other forms of addiction. We feel like we're on top of the world until we're not.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. You said it in a better way than I said it. No, that's what I meant. There were two parts to what I was saying. One was that I was unhealthy and I associated skinny and happy. That was one part of it. The second part of it is that was one thing I had control over in my life.
Yes.
Like you had with drugs, I had an eating disorder. I don't know that I had so much of an eating disorder because I did eat, probably not a lot. I had exercise bulimia. I love that term. And I always had that. But I was in control. The rest of my life, I had zero control. That's where my aggression was.
Yeah.
So I might have not come across the way. I might have not said what I meant properly. But
I kind of got what you meant. I understood what you meant. You were saying self-esteem, but I wanted to just clarify that for people listening. Because
it's not healthy.
I understood.
I know that.
Right.
But with a lot of therapy. Yeah. Go on, Bill.
We talk about how we're happy because we're in control, but the truth is we're not really in control. We think we're in control.
No.
And I tell you, I had the same experience as Lori. You took away my drugs and alcohol when I got clean and sober, and I couldn't function. And I've been very successful. I had built a production company. I had put myself through school. I had clients, and I had equipment. And, I was making my name in Hollywood. And then I got sober, and I had to sit down to write an important letter. And I wrote the letter, did very well writing the letter, turned it over, and I couldn't remember what side of the envelope you put the stamp on. I mean, it got that bad. And I lost the business. I lost the clients. I never re-achieved, frankly. I never got back to that level of six, even to that level, never mind going beyond it. I never got back to it ever in my life. But I did gain myself. That's the benefit of recovery. It's not the stuff you acquire. It's the sense of who you are that you acquire. That, I began to see that I had value beyond whether I owned a production company or had clients or whatever it was, that I thought I had. And I never achieved it again. Now, I felt some resentment about that, I have to be honest. It took me quite a while to just accept that I was wherever I was at that moment. And for me, staying sober had to be the priority for years. I had to concentrate on that because I was so sick, I couldn't not concentrate on it. It had to be the most important thing in my life was never taking a drink today. That was it.
Yep.
And that went on for years. Until that got behind me, I kind of just had to some degree, follow life as it developed. I didn't have the perception of the power that I had before I got sober. Does that make sense?
Oh my God, Bill! You could talk. That's exactly what it was like for me. You know, I came with success and I got into recovery, and I literally was just non-functional. And then, of course, I was bombarded with sexual abuse memories, and that took a whole other direction. But, yes, my life became not using and trying to find myself. It took years to work on unraveling all of my abuse and trying to figure out who I was, let alone be out in the world and be successful. I felt like my success was internal at that point. It was all about finding out who I was, because without that, I had nothing. I really knew that.
Right.
And I knew that if I ever used, forget it.
Right. Right.
So I can relate.
Yeah, no, I related to you. That's why I shared what I did. Leah, is this helping you at all? Or do you have a question or a comment you'd like to make? Or I want to make sure you feel included.
I'm very happy listening. This is very helpful. It's good to hear. Thank you.
Okay. Of course.
Leah, were you on the last time? You talked about somebody you knew with addiction.
Yes. Yes, I did.
And can you say anything about how that is for you right now? I was just curious, just because you talked about it.
Yeah. You know, I'm not close. Obviously, I don't think there's anything that I can really do for that person anymore. I had to take a very, basically, that is, I don't know what, you know, I couldn't basically speak for every person with addiction who is involved with someone. I can only say that in this particular case, I had to completely remove myself, because whether it's fully the drugs or it's combined with other issues, that individual just, you know, attacking me constantly, out to destroy me, and I had to just completely remove myself. There was no more trying to help or think that it will, you know, he'll hit rock bottom already, get the help he needs. And I had to just completely remove myself.
Well, good for you. Can you share a little bit about that by any chance? Because I would imagine there are people listening right now that would love to remove themselves, and because of COVID and all that that's going on, I'll tell you, this is a huge deal for people right now, especially people with domestic violence and abuse going on in the homes, and suicide rates going up, and addiction escalating. I mean, when you said that you had to get out of the home, I thought there are so many people that can't get out of the home right now.
Well, yeah, no, it wasn't the home. I had to get out of the relationship. It was a relationship.
Oh, the relationship.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to completely remove myself from this relationship. At any level, it went from a relationship, you know, to just friendship. And then even the friendship was something I couldn't do because the person was so aggressive, just was constantly looking to attack me and yell at me at every opportunity and hurt
me. I'm glad you got out. Good for you.
Yeah.
Was that hard?
Yeah, it was hard because, yes and no, yes. It was hard because I care. I think in general I care about people. But I did. I got. Mm-hmm. I was connected, and I cared about him. But I care about myself in the end. And I mean, it was just too much abuse, and it's, I think he made it easy for me. Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
You know, but when people, I was just reading about in Psychology Today in the escalation in suicide rates, and you know, I feel so much concern for children right now that have to be in their homes, and I was thinking the other day what it would be like for me to be a kid living at home with incest and not being able to go to school or get out of the house. And I'm wondering if anybody can speak to that, because I just feel like there is so much going on right now.
I can speak for that in more of an abuse, not incest.
Of course. Yeah.
My children lived in a war zone. Now, I'm not saying it was for a very long period of time, but it was enough to do enough damage. So I can't imagine children having to live in a home, children, teenagers, young adults, having to live in a home where there's abuse, verbal, mental, physical, whatever. To me, that's a war zone. And and to be stuck in that place and have no relief, I mean, I could just tell you from my little experience now, my middle son, who's 20, wanted out of this house. He needed to be with friends. He was here too long. He's been used to living away. We trigger each other, my three kids and I, every now and then. He wanted out, and he went to New York. And he's in seventh heaven. He's got his friends. Now, was that ideal? Did I want that? No. But talking to his doctors and his rabbi, they said that's the best thing for him. So
yeah,
my house is not a war zone. It's loving, it's caring, but we still do trigger each other at times. That's a work in progress. But I can't even imagine young kids, young adults, teenagers having to live with. I'm thinking back to the worst time when things were really bad. Having to be in that situation, stuck at home, horrific.
Yeah.
Somebody would end up dead, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
yes.
So NASCA is working on a series of public service announcements with Mike Tickinen, who's been our guest frequently. He has a group called Invisible Children, Kids at Risk Action in Minnesota. And the focus of the PSAs is exactly this issue, that children, and we're talking younger children than the 20-year-old, but children are kind of stuck at home without the safety of any place that they can go. For example, school is often a refuge for kids who are being abused in their house. They may even find some kind of counseling at school that they won't find in their house. They're trapped, an awful lot of kids, with their predators. And so it's a call to action for the rest of us, right, basically to be aware of this phenomenon that's going on right now and how serious it is for kids who are at risk, because they don't have, there's no escape right now if their predator happens to be under the same roof.
I can't imagine. Yep.
Yeah.
So
and the predator's
not.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say the predator's not even going to work. He's just home with them all day long. That's scary.
That's right. That's right.
Very
scary. Can you repeat his information, his name?
Mike Tickinen.
The guy that you.
He's been our guest. T-I-K-K, Tickinen. And he's been our guest multiple times. And he is not that hard to find. He runs a group called Invisible Children, which you can look for, and also Kara, KARA, which stands for Kids at Risk Action. These are two organizations you'll find Mike Tickenham listed under. And he and I and Randy Burton, an attorney in Texas, are working together on trying to put a set of PSAs together. NASCA is a partner, in other words, in this. And I'm frustrated because I got software and I got even ordered a keyboard, which I've had for 36 hours now, and my system keeps crashing with it. I may have to somehow upgrade my computer to help them in the way that I want it to. But in any case, it's exactly
I have
the
a guy for you
talking.
if you want a computer guy. I just bought a computer from him. He's amazing. If you need one.
And it's the exact issue that you brought up, Lori.
Yeah. So how can you say more about that? I mean, what's your?
It's simply an attempt to raise awareness. I mean, I know from my background in film and TV and so forth that it's very difficult to put public service announcements on stations, but they all are required to run a certain number of hours of them every month, a certain number of minutes of them every month, in order to maintain their license. But they select which ones they put on. So this is why we see an awful lot of them that are from animal shelters and things like that, that are kind of, they're pulling at our heart, right? Maybe cancer societies and things like that. But an issue like child abuse is a hard one to get across the desk of the station manager, frankly. I mean, you can deliver it, but will he play it or she play it is the question. So I'm trying to educate Mike and Randy about how to write scripts that have some punch to them, knowing that we're probably going to produce some 10-second, 20-second, 30-second, and one-minute pieces, and the most likely that get used are probably the 10 and 20-second. Well, you don't have that much time in 10 and 20 seconds. So it has to be eye-catching. It has to be factual. It has to be like I said, heart pulling, a little bit of a heart pull has to be involved, just like when you see a poor kitten that's not eaten in 3 days, right?
Yes, exactly. It's
not easy to do. And I'm not sure. We have some testimonial type things from a number of people already on tape, and we have a set of topics. I asked each one of them to generate 10 things that would be potential issues that could be addressed. And we're still working on that. But then I'm going to glean down from that, or the three of us will, just a few. I mean, if we are lucky enough to do a one-minute version of these things, you'll only have time to do five topics in 1 minute. You know.
Yes.
And in 10 seconds, you only have one topic. And in 20, maybe two. And that's how fast they go. So, anyway. The topic of kids being left at home with their predators is definitely going to be one of the topics, and it may be the one that goes on the 10-second list.
Because that is a scary thing. It's a very scary issue right now for kids. My God, with schools not opening. And I know in San Diego they announced that they weren't going to let kids go back in August or September. And so more kids now are going to be at home with parents who, you know, people, especially if parents are out of work and are disgruntled and are frustrated, because a lot of times rage comes from fear. So you have a lot of people, there's so much uncertainty about how things are going to, how what's going to happen right now. I can't imagine, on top of it, losing one's job or not having an office to go to or not being able, the kids not having schools to go to. It's really a big deal. I mean, we talk about COVID, but mental health is huge right now.
Right. Well, let me play
just
you
a lot.
A 30-second. Let me play you a 30-second version. Okay, this is just a man He's a well-known man in Minnesota. He's a broadcaster. He's talking straight to camera, and there's very little else. But you'll hear in his audio what you can do in 30 seconds. Okay, here you go.
The COVID pandemic has added great stress to all families, but most of all, the families at risk for violence and abuse. The lockdown is keeping children away from mandated reporters, and the only safety they can find, the classroom. Every community must find new ways to protect vulnerable children. Becoming involved in the safety for all of them. Volunteer, vote for, and support child-friendly initiatives. Remember, all adults are the protectors of all children.
So that's exactly 30
seconds.
Wow, that's
great. That's great.
Actually,
there was good stuff in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this maybe this is our 30-second version, but it'll have other pictures on top of it, not just one man talking. And
yes,
then
I understand.
We have a variety of different topics. This is really one topic, but it lasts 30 seconds. You can't do that. In a 10-second commercial, all you can say is, a lot of children are home right now trapped with their predators. They have no place to escape because the schools are shut. You know, that's it. And then a card that says, X number of children are molested every year in the country. That's it. That's all the time you have. So anyway. We are working on it, and I can't tell you where it'll end up, but we're going to work on it.
I think it's amazing.
I'm really glad. Yeah.
Go on. Now, I was just going to say I think it's amazing and that you guys are doing that, and there's one other thing that you guys are overseeing, because I'm talking to other people, and they all seem to be saying the same thing. That parents are going through a depression because of all this that's going on. And unfortunately, abusers are letting it out on either their children or their spouses. So that's another very big issue. I mean, we all, I think every single one of us that are still here can relate to depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a very good place to be. And especially in a time like this. And put on top of that kids that are in the home of abusers or predators, add that to the mix. Not good.
No.
I don't know how you would approach this, because that's not our issue. Our issue is children. Okay, Bailey, if you don't interrupt and you let me finish my thoughts, it really helps. you might be able to say something like, to the mother, right, assuming the father's the predator, are you a mother that's at home with your children now along with your predator husband? Please make the call on behalf of your children. There's nowhere else for them to turn. That you could say in 10 seconds.
I was not talking about your project. I was just talking about in general.
Okay.
Go on, Lori.
Okay.
No. I'm listening. Go on.
No, I was just talking about how we're saying people, kids or women or men that are home with the predators, abusers and stuck in the same home. Is a horrible situation. Add depression to the mix, it's not a good thing. That was my point.
No, I agree with you. And I also, that's partly why suicide is up so high.
Yeah.
Because of depression right now.
That's right.
It's depression, and there's this sense of there's no way out. No one has answers, and that creates like this feeling of being more feeling of being trapped today, with no way out, with no answers in sight. People want answers. People want to believe that things are going to get better, even though we all know that intellectually things get better. But when you're living in it emotionally, it's hard to know that things are getting better. And we tend to not believe
that when you're depressed, especially, you have no clue that anything's going to get better. So, yeah, it's a big dilemma.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. We still have Linda had to leave, I guess, but we have Bailey and Leah and Lori, and we have still have 25 minutes left, and I'd love to have somebody else call in if they'd like, simply by dialing 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. What are the issues that you're seeing especially difficult to deal with that perhaps are coming around with the coronavirus? I mean, I spoke to somebody today who pointed out that because I described what NASCA does, that we probably didn't have to miss a beat to deal with the coronavirus, and that he was right, that he recognized it as an outsider, because we already do almost everything we do by phone and by computer, and we do them from our own homes. So the work that we have here, we're lucky, and now we've added a Zoom meeting. We've actually increased the services we provide because of the coronavirus. And recognizing that meeting together wasn't going to be possible, we found a way to do it virtually with Zoom, and it's working out great. So we're kind of lucky in this respect. But I know a lot of people don't feel that way. I understand that. And I'd love somebody to call in and say, you know, how do you feel about where your life is right now? Let us know and see if we can suggest some things that might help. 646-595-2118.
You know that somebody just messaged. Go on, sorry. Go on.
It's okay. No, I was just going to reiterate who Lori was. Somebody just messaged you?
No, a friend of mine messaged me. Nothing to do with the show, but she just said that Palm Beach County schools are not opening as of now. So that means that schools are not planning, a lot of schools right now are not planning to reopen. That is not good. It's not good for kids.
I believe we are facing, you're right, Bailey. We are facing one of the worst falls and winters we've ever known in that respect. All across the country, in Los Angeles, where I have my house, we can't go back to Los Angeles. We're kind of trapped here in South Florida, which isn't a great place to be trapped right now. The two are among the worst off, you know, in terms of worse than. Yeah, go ahead.
Bill, are you near where a lot of this is going on in Florida? Or are you kind of in a pocket where?
No, we are just north of Miami-Dade County and just south of Palm Beach County. We're where Fort Lauderdale is, if you know where Fort Lauderdale is. So it's called Broward County. Broward County is experiencing, you know, some of the worst numbers. And all of this southeast part of Florida is in the same boat as kind of Southern California is. So those are the two choices for us. So we're kind of just staying here, you know.
Bill and I are like 15 minutes from each other. But I think it's really, the numbers are really bad in Palm Beach, which we're very close to.
Right.
So,
what are the numbers like in Palm Beach? Do you know?
I can only tell you that a friend of mine that I work out with, she's a nurse, and she hasn't been in the gym. And I was like, what's going on? How are you? Are you okay? And she's like, it's overloaded. It's not even normal. They're taking only patients with COVID now. They're testing positive.
Right.
I don't know so much about Broward. I'm not on top of it. Go on.
Well, I do know, Bailey, that seven of the hospitals in Miami-Dade County are to capacity, and one in Broward is to capacity. This is not good. Not only is there a lot of sickness around, but as the sickness continues, there's no place to put the new people. I mean, you know, this is bad. So
very bad.
Yeah. Los
I guess
Angeles,
I'm glad my son
announced,
is in
they're
New
not going to open their school. Go ahead.
Really?
No, I said, I guess I'm glad my son is in Long Island because it's kind of quiet there now. I think they went to their work.
Yes.
Where in Long Island, Bailey? I'm from Long Island. I'm from Merrick.
In Cedarhurst.
Merrick.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm from Merrick originally.
My dad's family's in Ruffel Center.
Serious?
I'm serious.
That's so funny.
There are a lot of Murrays in Ruffel Center, and they're in the police department. The fire department's filled with Murrays. And I have a big family back there, about half of which are still in Ruffel Center. My uncle, Eugene, was the mayor of Ruffel Center for like 4 or 5 terms, and now his son is. Yeah.
Wow.
Eugene Murray.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that's not far from there.
Oh, no. It's right there. Yeah.
Yep. My first crush was in Ruffel Center.
Oh.
Maybe he
just
was
to
a
bring some, yeah, right. Just to bring some levity.
Well, we still have 20 minutes left. We can bring up a new topic. Maybe Leah has something with her that she'd like to throw out into the mix, and we can discuss it with her. Leah, do you have anything with you that you'd like to talk about?
Anything I'd like to talk about? That's a good point. Right now,
she has so much to talk about.
I don't want to bring up a topic that is of no interest or, you know, doesn't pertain to the organization. So I don't know. Why don't you try it?
Anything,
if you have anything?
Anything related?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anything? Well, I mean, at the moment, I'm you know, as much as I can handle sharing, only because I decided to call in. I figured I'll just listen at least. Just not feeling so great. I guess I could start with, I have a very bad backache, and I've had like a headache since yesterday because I had court yesterday. So I really feel that that kind of stress triggered my body because I'm very fit and healthy, thank God. You know, I'm a personal trainer, a fitness instructor, a dancer, and I stay very, you know, I eat healthy and I'm always active and training, working out, biking, walking. So I was a little surprised with the way it hit my body, but I guess that kind of stress really can do that. Court for me was yesterday, and that's when the headache started. And it didn't go very well because the other party didn't show, which is my ex-husband and his wife. They keep bringing me into court even though we're divorced 4 years later. And it does pertain, all of this kind of connects back to what my children are going through, which I guess does pertain to all of this, is it is a form of abuse because they're living in the home with them. And this woman is extremely toxic. I think I touched upon it last time when you were on the show, possibly a little bit, or at least others, Bill and some of the others, Linda, and, you know, would know about that part of my situation, is that my kids are living with this woman who's extremely toxic, who I believe to be, based on
her
behavior,
abusive.
A psychopath. Yeah, very abusive, a psychopath. And she is known to be explosive based on her first husband, who had a very long conversation with me a few years back. And he said that you don't want to be around her when she's angry. You've never seen someone unleash and explode on people. He goes, you never want to get her angry. And I could see that. She's extremely manipulative and controlling and lies. And, I mean, I don't even – again, I'm going to throw something out. It's just going to sound so far out that it's going to sound not believable and crazy. But she's a drug dealer. And this is all part of my story that I've been journaling through this pandemic, and I'm hoping that, God willing, in the right time, I'll – be connected with the right people to edit and hopefully write my book. You know, the story isn't over. I don't have the children, and they brought me into court this week for finally the courts reopened, and I was brought in for a stay-away order of protection that they put on me.
They put
to keep
that
away
on
from
you.
yeah, to put away from my husband. This is all part of the way the storyline she likes it to look. Now, she does it to protect herself and to be in control of the situation. She gets off on controlling people, and she likes to keep my children from me, and she is threatened if I talk to my ex-husband, who I divorced and I left. I want him to move on and be happy, and even if that would be her, that would be great. But she's not a good person. Any person who keeps children from their mother is abusive and cruel, to say the least. So this has been all part of, like, one of the last shows was, what's her name again? I forgot. Marianne talked about her story, which was very similar to mine. So it was, it's corruption in the courts, which happens. The party who has
Absolutely.
More money, and they actually pay off judges. And, they can pay off the judge, and all of that can work to their benefit. And I'm dealing with people. I mean, I believe my ex is on drugs. I believe this woman who is a drug dealer is probably on something at times. There's just her mood. She swings, up and down, but very aggressive. And this has been my nightmare for 4 years. I don't have my children. I don't know what kind of home they're living in. I can kind of, I have nightmares from it, thinking about it. I can't even communicate with the father of my children now because of the stay away order. So I don't know how to raise the kids. There's no way of knowing what they're enduring. Yeah.
Right. Well, you're embroiled in a legal battle that has restrictions on you. Let me ask Lori, what would you say to Leia about her dealing with Leia? What would you say to her?
Well, of what are you referring to? Because I know what I thought about, Leia, when you said, I'm surprised that my back is hurting and that it sounds like really emotionally charged. And, our emotions are in our bodies, and they come out in physical sensations in our bodies. And they don't come from thinking. They come from feeling. And so when you're holding on and when you're in an emotionally charged situation, it's really easy to get physical symptoms erupt. Because it sounds like you're kind of holding on for dear life when you go through something that's so emotionally charged. Wait, hold on for a second. I gotta go inside. I'm outside and a dog is barking. But do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I
mean,
hear
there's
what you
no.
Said. Yeah, it's amazing how can affect you.
It sure
it
does.
It really does.
Yeah. It really does. Physical pain is very much connected to emotional pain. You can't separate the two. And when you go through something emotionally charged, there's a tendency deep inside of us to hold on. It's kind of like you're on a roller coaster and you're holding on for dear life.
Right. Yep.
And that is very stressful on our bodies and could create pain. Is that what you were talking about, Bill, or were you talking about something else?
That sounds really good. So the recommendation then becomes dealing with the emotional part of it, helps with the physical part of it. So
you
recognizing
have to deal
that,
with the emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. And as we said before, Lori and I especially said it, we recognize that we don't have control over a lot of stuff that we thought we did have control over. And if we continue to act like we do, we're probably going to get the same kind of results. So for me, and I'll just say it for me, I had to come to the conclusion that I needed to give up the struggle. It's not give up life, but just for this point, there's nothing I can do about it, so don't do anything. It might be a better way to say it. But some people express it as being in surrender, in a place of surrender. For this moment, not for your whole life, for right now. and trying to let go of the emotional parts of what's built up inside of you, because they are definitely affecting your physical well-being.
No question about it.
Yes, and I am trying to, you know, I think I do a pretty good job overall of trying to manage my emotions and letting a lot of it go and just changing my mood quickly. And I try to work out and I take a lot of walks and I'm you know, I'll call a friend and or, you know, I try to change my state of mind and just relax, because it is very painful. I realize I surrendered. I'm so not in control of this situation, and it's up to God, and I have to, and I pray a lot of times, and I have faith, and that's what I hold on to. But you know, it's like,
you know, but,
I had,
but there yeah. is if there is a reality of having of walk the emotional pain,
right.
changing our frame of mind is one thing. But allowing ourselves to feel whatever it is that we're feeling in relation to something traumatic is really important.
Yeah.
So I would imagine you must have a whole lot of feeling going on about this.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
fear,
I do.
And a lot of fear.
Yeah, there is a lot of fear. I mean, there isn't a moment that goes by that I don't wonder what it's like for the kids.
Oh my God! Yeah, I can imagine.
They're aware that she's a dealer.
Mhm. Yeah.
They're 15 and 17 girls.
Mhm.
And they for sure they know she is. They know what she's doing
mm-hmm.
for a living. It's awful. She does it right out of the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's
talk
our,
about
it's
kids
our,
living.
Yeah.
Talk about kids living in this time right now with abuse and not having anywhere to go. This is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is true. And her business has always been from the home. So the kids are home all day seeing what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Are you
right.
Are you able to talk to your kids?
I am allowed to as of now. I'm sure that'll be another one they pull out, because they've done that before over time. I've had stay away orders from the kids that they've concocted, and you know, a whole slew of lies. Every single thing, everything was a lie, and they have the right judge who they're connected with and signs off on it.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's completely illegal. Like none of it is justified. None of it. And they get away with it. And so I've had
can believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I always believe that, you know, I always know that in the back of my mind she could pull that one out again. But, you know, I tried to get a stay away order from her, because she's really the problem in this picture worse. I'm not saying my ex is not ultimately responsible for allowing all this to go on. But he's really at this point at her mercy. That's her MO. She emasculates her men, and she has to control everybody. So there's no such thing as, I think he's not well, which is part of why I divorced him. And he fell into the hands of the worst person, and he has no say. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
it is her controlling and doing all of this. But, for the courts, for the most part, she has to use him. He's the face of it, because he's the one connected to me. I can't get a stay away order because of the same thing. She's not related to me, and they won't give it to me. I don't have
mm-hmm.
solid proof. I don't have any proof of her threatening my life verbally or physically, even though she tried to run me over just 3 weeks ago.
Yes. Okay.
In my neighborhood.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
this
that's
is
a hard point.
The world we're living in.
Yep.
There's no such thing as a, police being able to do what they're supposed to do, or judges, courts. There's just, I wish, gone are the days of thinking that, you know, things are justified. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
There's no justice.
Yeah.
There's really no justice. Yeah.
It's a really horrible thing.
The solution is, go ahead, David.
No, I just was saying that it's a horrible world we're living with. We're living in every aspect. There's so much corruption. There's so much craziness. There's the COVID. You know, you would think people would have learned. You know, life is so short. You know, live it to the fullest and all that kind of stuff. And nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. If anything, it's gotten worse. So it's really sad to see this, and it's horrible. As my best friend, you know, since we're like 15, to see her in so much pain and go through such a horrific thing, and I can understand some of it because I walked in her shoes. A lot of people don't get it, and they'll never get it. They think her story's BS, but I know it's possible.
We don't think that way, Bailey.
No, because you guys, have been through trauma and abuse, so you get it. That's why the Nasty family is awesome.
Well, thank God I do have some people who, go ahead.
For me, the solution is spiritual. Okay?
Yeah,
so
I agree.
We went through the lack of control, right? You have to recognize that you don't have control. Even though it seems like you do, you don't. And also, you have to be in today. It doesn't matter that the world is worse today than it's ever been. It matters that today is today. And that's all you can ever deal with, this day. But if I admit that I have a lack of control, and I do have a spiritual connection, which I heard Leah say she does, then possibly you can turn to whatever God that is, whatever higher power that is, and say, I don't understand it, but I believe you have enough power to take care of it, and I'm going to turn it over to you. And then you have to act as if you have to act as if you've turned it over to him. You can't pretend otherwise. Either have done it or not.
You have to really trust, not just believe in God. You have to trust. Trust is the part
you have
that you hand over.
In.
Right.
Sure, you have to believe in it. You have to have a God you believe in and trust. Sure.
Right,
anyway.
But I'm saying there's a difference. What I was told, actually, this is part of some of the lectures that I listened to, which are all spiritual. They're, and I find them very encouraging, is that this guy had explained that there's a very big difference. I know in Judaism, this is what we believe. There's a very big difference between believing in God or saying, I trust in God. Believing is one level.
I skip that because we only have like a minute left.
Go ahead.
I want to give Lori the opportunity to fill that minute. I want to give Lori the opportunity to fill that minute with whatever she'd like to as we sign off tonight. Lori, you got about 1 minute.
Okay. I just wanted to thank everybody for sharing. And I'm sorry, Leah, that you're going through that. I do know that the abuse in the courts, I've heard, I actually have a connection with a woman, Rose Colombo, who has done a lot of work with the law, the abuse in the courts around these kinds of situations. So I really, my heart goes out to you. And, you know,
thanks.
I just know that walking through your pain is something that's important to do, because the more you constrict and hold on to emotional pain, your breathing, it makes your body constrict in ways, and it really can lead to physical pain. So finding a way to release some of it is really important, the emotional pain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You were listening to Lori Golden tonight, and I want to thank her very much. Lori is the author of the book My House of Lies: Awakening from a Childhood of Sexual Abuse. It's linked in the description of tonight's show to her website, LoriGoldenAuthor.com. You can also find a link in the description of tonight's show to Lori's LinkedIn page. So please do get in touch with Lori, and I want to say how grateful we are, Lori, for you to be doing this. And you have a wealth to offer here, believe me. And I just love you for committing to doing this. So thanks again.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Bill Murray. I'm in South Florida saying thank you for listening tonight. May God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.